Welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The Republican Party has lost 5 of the last 6 popular votes in presidential elections, but the GOP has found much more success in Congress. In January, already in charge of the U.S. House, they took control of the Senate. Republicans have been well represented in Congress for the past 2 decades. Why the discrepancy? Thomas Schaller answers that question in his latest book, The Stronghold, How Republicans Captured Congress but Surrendered the White House. Schaller is professor of political science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, UMBC. We spoke about his book in January. In it, he asserts that it was because of Republican dominance on Capitol Hill that the party surrendered the White House. I asked him to explain.
Well, the numbers are there, at least historically, right? The Republicans won 7 of 10 presidential elections between Eisenhower and Bush 41's initial election. But then, as you point out, they've lost 5 of the 6 most previous presidential elections in the popular vote, 4 of the 6 in the Electoral College. Of course, Bush won in 2000 despite losing the popular vote. So they weren't used to be a strong presidential party and a weak congressional party. And then after the Reagan-Bush era, they became just the opposite. And how did that happen? So the book is a little bit about that chronology. But also, as you ask, how is one related to the other?
Can't you both be strong congressionally and White House contender?
There are, of course, moments, and the Republicans did have unified government under George W. Bush, really, for the first time since the pre-New Deal era, other than the 2 years at the start of the Eisenhower administration. So why is that? Well, some of it's the voters. I mean, at the end of the Obama administration, 2 years from now, in January 2017, we will have finished a 64-year period in which we've had divided government. For 44 of those 64 years, 70% of the time, in almost every one of the 6 possible variations of control, because the party can control the White House and neither chamber, the party can control the White House and one chamber or so forth. And so the Republicans won the presidency first. One of the things I talk about in the book is that the Republicans were the minority party for so long, controlling nothing. And then they won the White House through Eisenhower, Nixon, Reagan. Then with Reagan, they won the White House and the Senate. Then finally with Gingrich, they won it all, but not the White House with Clinton. And they've lost them back in the same order. They lost the presidency back, then the Senate. And for the last 4 years, they had just the House. They were a House-only party, very similar to the way that Tip O'Neill and the Democrats had only the House in the first 6 years of the Reagan administration. And they were a very weak party. And you remember, this was the rise of Clinton Democratic Leadership Council centrism. It was Democrats who came in and said, we are a party controlled by our House wing. We're identified by our constituency groups, feminist, minorities, unions, the gays, right? This sort of notion that they were captured, right, by their horrible constituency groups. I'm using the sort of language that was used about the Democratic Party at that time, right? Well, now the Republicans, though they're a largely white-only party, they are actually captured more by their constituency groups and were dominated by their House wing. And their House wing can win elections in their very highly gerrymandered House districts, but can't necessarily win statewide, which is why they struggled with the Senate until recently. And then their message doesn't really play on the national level. So what the argument is in the book is that they became a strong congressional party. They became more conservative. As they became more conservative, they became more entrenched in the Congress at the expense of their ability to deliver an agenda and a message that can pass on a presidential level to a national audience.
So is the root cause of the trend you're writing about all about gerrymandered districts? Is it all about the members picking their constituents as opposed to the constituents picking them?
Well, that only applies, of course, on the House, right? You can't gerrymander a Senate district because the district is the state. So some of it has to do with that. And as I point out in the book, and many people observed after the 2012 elections, that Republicans got fewer votes nationwide in the House races, but they had more seats because they have gerrymandered the districts in a
very— And you say in the book, that's how gerrymandering works.
And that's how it works. And you can't really blame them for doing that. And you can't certainly blame Republicans for the fact that Democrats tend to be geographically concentrated in urban and inner suburbs. That's not their fault either. They're capitalizing on it. That could be on them. And of course, they can't gerrymander the states. But as I show in the book in Chapter 6, the Republicans are overrepresented even in the Senate because they have a lot of small state senators, 2 from Idaho, 2 from Alaska historically and so forth. So they've been overrepresented for 30 or 40 years going back to the 80s. In other words, having more seats in the Senate than the share of the population they represent from their respective states. And that wasn't always the case. Back in the 30s and 40s, the Republicans were underrepresented in the Senate when they used to have Republican senators from crazy places like California and New York where they don't have it now. So the Democrats are underrepresented in the Senate, and the Democrats are underrepresented in the House. And this has created sort of a false canary in the coal mine phenomena. Republicans say, hey, we're doing pretty well here. We're controlling Congress. Our message must be working. But it's working despite the fact that a majority of Republicans in Congress represent a minority of the country. And so you get to the presidential elections, and they're scratching their heads. Why do we keep losing these presidential elections? And it's because the messages that work for your states and your constituencies in the House districts sell pretty well. Think of Todd Akin in 2012 talking about forcible rape, and suddenly that becomes a national controversy. Why? Because in his home district, he probably talked about forcible rape in town meetings with conservative constituents, and they didn't blink an eye. They're like, oh yeah, forcible rape. This seems like a perfectly legitimate reason to vote against abortion in the Congress. And Paul Ryan voted against for forcible rape provisions in Congress, and nobody, same exact vote as Todd Akin, but because he wasn't talking about it, that's when it became a national issue, and suddenly you realize what works at home in your little congressional district isn't necessarily saleable on a national level.
That's UMBC political science professor and Baltimore Sun columnist Thomas Schaller here on Maryland Morning, WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his book, The Stronghold, How Republicans Captured Congress But Surrendered the White House. You mentioned Newt Gingrich of Georgia. He was chosen speaker in 1994 when the Republicans took the House for the first time in 40 years. You assert repeatedly that, quote, Gingrich, not Ronald Reagan, should be remembered as the most significant Republican politician of the past half century, close quote. Why?
Well, first of all, as I pointed out previously, it's been a more Congress-dominant party than a presidential-dominant. If the Reagan legacy was lasting, they would have continued to dominate presidential politics on the Reagan formula, and they haven't been able to do that. And yet they've dominated in the congressional model. And what does that mean? Well, one of the fascinating things about the governing philosophy of conservatives, whatever one thinks, however liberal one might be, the conservatives have, and Republican conservatives specifically, have a different governing philosophy. And it's not necessarily to come in and make major policy leaps to expand the role of government. In fact, it's just the reverse, to contract the role of government, to roll things back. Whereas recent and current Republican Speaker John Boehner said, we should be judged by the laws we repeal, not by the laws that we pass. Think about that for a second, right? That's a fundamentally different governing approach about the proper role and function and size and scope of the government. So when Gingrich runs on the contract with America, which I talk about at some length in the book, if you go back and read the provisions of the contract, it wasn't a series of policies like, here's what we're going to do with Medicare, here's what we're going to do with transportation spending. It's a series of procedural proposals. We're going to ban proxy voting in Congress. We're going to make all members sign a pledge that they'll live to the same rules that average Americans are going to do. We're going to restructure the committee system. We're going to have zero-based budgeting. So they said, we're going to reform the processes of Congress. It wasn't really a bill of policy particulars, whereas Democrats tend to run like Nancy Pelosi and say, hey, if we win the Congress in 2006, we're going to raise the minimum wage, which is a policy outcome in itself. Well, Gingrich realized that you could use procedural politics to capture the Congress. And so when people are surprised that they're the party of no, to liberal voices, they're like, that's all they do. They stand in opposition to things. But to conservative ears, that is an accomplishment in itself. Not doing something, repealing laws, standing in opposition to what Democrats want to affirmatively do, that's an agenda in and of itself, and an agenda that sells well to conservative ears.
I appreciate your walking us through it. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thomas Schaller. He's a professor of political science at UMBC and author of The Stronghold, How Republicans Captured Congress But Surrendered the White House. We spoke in January. Got more information about the book at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland Morning is an original production of
Your Public Radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Johnny McCone
and Connor Graham.
We have production help from
Scott Seiss.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in Maryland history, 1797, the original USS Constellation, one of six frigates Congress commissioned to confront the Barbary pirates, was launched at Colonel David Stoddard's shipyard on Harris Creek in Fells Point. She saw service in many battles, including the War of 1812, before she was struck for scrap in 1853. At the same time, the keel was laid for the second USS Constellation, the sloop of war we see in Baltimore Harbor today. We'll sail back here Wednesday. Come along with us.